Content warning, this episode contains references to rape, violence, and murder. Please call or visit the hotlines included in the description if you need help.
I Murder!
Hi everyone! Welcome to I Murder, the podcast where Gen Z talks true crime. I'm your host Jocelyn, and every other week I invite a special guest on my podcast to talk a little bit about true crime. And today we have TikTok influencer Allison DeRose joining us. Hey! How's it going? Oh my god, I'm so excited that you're here.
I am so excited to talk about this today. It is.
I know.
Just the best. And, I am iMurder's number one listener, so.
Are you really?
Yeah, probably.
You know what? I'm going to actually search that up, and I'm going to hold you accountable for that.
My Spotify statistics will give me away.
Yeah, it will. Okay, so yeah, like, I basically heard about this case a year and a half ago, and I've always known about it, and it's always baffled me. And I remember, like, when I first heard about it, I shared it with all of my friends. And so when I started this podcast, I was like, okay, I need to talk about this. But, like, who is a perfect person to talk about it with?
Me.
And that so happened to be you. And what's so crazy is that you actually have a lot of, like, similarities or, like, connections to this case.
Yeah, the crazy thing is, so I go to school in D.C. and one of the people involved in this case went to school in D.C., different school, but... And this case is in an area of Maryland that's 20 minutes away from me. And I've actually been to the exact shopping center that this case takes place in. So this
that's
is like a crazy connection that you just happened to ask me to be on this episode with this case. So it's very exciting. Yeah.
It's so exciting. So I guess without further ado, let's get into it.
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so today we're going to be covering the case of the Lululemon murder. And this is actually like a pretty well-known case just because there's so many like insane twists and there's a lot that you don't see coming. And as the name suggests, the crime took place in a Lululemon store in Bethesda, Maryland, which for those of you who don't know, Lululemon is kind of like a high-end workout retail store. I personally have never really bought anything from there just because the leggings go up to like $150.
I'm wearing my one pair of Lululemon leggings today.
No, you're not.
I did. I planned ahead. My one pair I own.
Man, you know what? Maybe I should have invested in a good pair of Lululemon leggings for this.
Maybe just for the case. Yeah, sure.
Maybe just for the case, and then I'll quickly return it and get all my money back. Okay, so on March 12, 2011, Lululemon store manager Rachel Oretley went to open the store early in the morning, as she typically did. But she noticed that something was off. Usually, the entrance to the store would be locked by the time she went to open up the store. However, this time, it was unlocked. And this particular Lululemon is set in a high-end strip mall with stores such as the Apple Store and Francesca's. So, you know, people with a good wad of cash are shopping there. But that also leaves room for a lot of potential robberies. And the door being unlocked is immediately a red flag for Rachel because the first thing they teach employees at Lululemon when closing is to lock the door to prevent any break-ins. So keeping this in mind, she slowly enters and comes across a gory scene. There were blood smears, footprints, items knocked down from the shelves, you name it. The store was a complete mess. And as she's walking through the scene, she could hear a painful moan coming from the back room. So startled, Rachel bolts out of the store and calls for help. She calls 911. And a man named Ryan, who was waiting in line at the nearby Apple store, noticed Rachel panicking and he rushes over to help her. So after she explains the situation to him, Ryan immediately offered to scope out the store for her to see if anything had been stolen. They go back inside the store. And as they're walking through, they notice that all the cash registers and safes had been left open and completely empty. So it's clear that they were walking through the aftermath of a robbery. So Rachel decides to stay behind, like, at the front of the store to, like, stay online with the 911 operator while Ryan continues to investigate. And he finally reaches the back room of the store. Surprisingly, there was even more of a mess. There was glass shattered all over the ground, items thrown all over the place, and blood. So much blood. There were bloody footprints, the same as the ones in the front. There were blood smears all over the walls and a huge trace of blood on the ground. It was literally everywhere. So Ryan starts to follow this blood trail, which leads him to the back end of the store. And like, can we just like pause for a second to like talk about Ryan? Like, he deserves props
to Ryan for continuing to walk throughout that store. Props to Rachel for even going back into the store. He's also a stranger. Like, he was just at the Apple store trying to get who knows what from Apple, and he suddenly is in the middle of a crime scene. I would go run screaming in the other direction.
The minute I see a smear of blood, I'm out. Goodbye.
Bye. Absolutely not. And like, you know, Rachel heard moaning and she like went back into the store with Ryan. I would not. I'd be like, Ryan, go ahead. I'm gonna stay outside.
You know what? Suit yourself. I'll be outside breathing some fresh
air. Exactly.
No, and you know what's really funny too is that on this particular day, the iPad 2 had come out. So you can imagine, like, Ryan woke up in the morning and he was like, "Today I'm getting my iPad 2. I've been waiting for this." And no, so he had no idea that as he was going to get his iPad 2, he would come out with trauma.
He said, "I'm getting the iPad 2. And what ended up happening was he didn't even get the iPad 2. I mean, maybe he did. I hope he got the iPad 2. But he ended up in the middle of an investigation. Like,
exactly.
This man was not prepared for that when he woke up that day.
Ryan is amazing. We love Ryan. And this episode is sponsored by the Ryan Foundation.
Ryan is... should have gotten a free iPad for being a good Samaritan.
Yeah,
exactly.
He should have. The street should have been named.
They should have rebuilt Bethesda Row Ryan. And named it after him.
Yeah, it should have been called Ryan Row.
Yep.
So Ryan keeps following the trail until he reaches a narrow hallway with a door, which is such a horror.
The way
movie
that
thing.
He still kept walking,
he still kept going.
This dude is brave.
He goes to the door. And he attempts to open it, but there's something really heavy pressing against it. So when the door finally budges open a few inches, he was able to like peek in and it reveals a large pool of blood. And laying above this blood is a woman's dead body facing down. And when I say she was covered in blood, I mean it. According to him, the scene was so gruesome that he could barely pick up if the victim was a man or a woman. When Ryan sees this, the first thing he does is rush out to inform Rachel. But something stops him in his tracks. A noise coming from the employee bathroom. He musters up some more courage and enters the bathroom, finding another woman laying on the ground face up in her own blood. And unlike the first woman, this one is found bound with zip ties on her wrists and ankles. So he tries to get a closer look, and he notices her chest rising and falling. She was still alive. But nonetheless, she had numerous cuts and injuries on her body, which only meant they had to get her help ASAP. So Ryan runs back to Rachel, who is on the phone with the 911 operator, and tells her that they need an ambulance. There were two injured women in the back, and one of them was still breathing. That's when it clicks for Rachel. These two women worked there. They were the only ones who had the closing shift the night before. The authorities finally arrive, and paramedics rush over to the breathing victim and rush her to the hospital. She was identified as 28-year-old Brittany Norwood. Now, when the authorities found Brittany, they not only noticed the zip ties binding her, but they noticed that her pants were torn at the crotch, suggesting that there was potentially a sexual motive behind this crime. She had also had a shirt loosely tied around her neck and an intense injury on her forehead. A rock was also left on the ground nearby, so that kind of like led investigators to believe that the rock was used to hurt Brittany. And let's talk a little bit about Brittany Norwood. She was born on May 19th, 1982 in Seattle, Washington. She was one of nine siblings, so she had a big and happy family. They never really had any, like, apparent issues, you know? They were, like, pretty well financially. They had a sturdy support system. And Brittany was also, like, really athletic. She played in numerous sports growing up, but she chose to focus on soccer by the time she was in college. She was actually one of the best players in her school, which landed her a spot in the university's team. Her experience in that soccer team, though, was wishy-washy, to say the least. Like, her soccer mates started noticing that their things started to go missing. Like, for example, a lip gloss or a shirt, you know, like small things that you notice. You don't really notice.
You would think you misplaced them, but then once everyone has lost something, it's a little bit...
You start putting two and two together.
It's a little bit suspicious, yeah.
Exactly. So after a while, they kind of like noticed that pattern. They became suspicious, and they noticed that everything started going missing once Brittany joined the team. So they decided to confront her, and that basically brought Brittany to break down and profusely apologize. But because this trust was broken, Brittany's teammates slowly started distancing themselves from her. However, this didn't stop her from stealing. Later on, Brittany applied for Lululemon, which seemed fitting, specifically because she was so athletic and she wanted to become a personal trainer. So she believed that working there would be kind of like that first step to that. And she actually got fired from her first Lululemon job. She actually like worked in two different Lululemons, but in the first one, she was caught stealing and from the store, and she got fired and actually lost her soccer scholarship. So that like says a lot to her actions.
So she has an established history of stealing so far.
Yeah. A lot of people think she was probably a kleptomaniac. Probably. Because it wasn't... Yeah, she wasn't stealing out of necessity. Like, her family was doing really well financially.
It's also weird because you mentioned, you know, there's no... Seems like she's pretty brought up pretty okay. She's having a pretty great life ending up stealing a lot of stuff, but...
Yeah, there isn't any apparent, like, trauma in her life.
Seems like a pretty normal college student at this point.
Yeah, so that's really interesting to note about her. So I guess like going back to present time, other paramedics enter the bloody scene where the other woman was found. She was identified as 30-year-old Jaina Murray, and she was pronounced dead at the scene. Something investigators notice upon entering the room is the numerous bloody tools scattered around, which were believed to have been used as weapons. The red toolbox, in which like all these tools belong to, was placed on top of Jaina's body. And no one really knows why this toolbox was placed there. Like, I don't know if like you have any theories. I was able to come up with a few, but I'd love to hear what you think first.
The first thing that's weird to me is, I know you mentioned there was like a rock near Brittany.
Yeah.
So the first thing that is really bizarre is there seems to be like a lot of focus on Jaina in this crime. Whether the angle is like a robbery, I know initially like the first angle is robbery. That's kind of weird for a robbery for like the toolbox to be placed on Jaina's body. And then it makes you wonder like if this was like a serial killing or like a more pre-planned killing. Did the toolbox have some significance to whoever killed Jaina? Like if the tools were used, why were tools used on Jaina and a rock used on Brittany? Whoever committed this crime has some... The focus is obviously on Jaina here. Like, that's already obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's already obvious that, like, because, like you said, like, comparing it to Brittany's injuries, or we're going to talk a little bit more about the injuries between these two victims, but Brittany had, like, a severe injury on her forehead, which probably came from a rock, which is pretty kind of like, it's kind of like a last minute decision. Like, oh, I found a rock here.
You don't find a rock inside the Lululemon. You have to go outside and get one.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. And or you bring one with you or something like that. But Jaina, she had like five different tools scattered around her. So it makes you wonder if like these this robber or this thief or these thieves had any specific interest in Jaina. I was able to research like a few theories that people have, and one of them was kind of like related to a notorious serial killer who is like the Golden State Killer, which I know you've probably heard of. So for those of you who haven't heard of the Golden State Killer, he was the serial killer in California. And what he would do with his victims is that he would stack plates over his victims while they were alive, so that if he were to like go to another room, he would make sure that like if he heard anything, like any plates falling, he knew that that was them trying to escape.
And yeah, I know them. He also used it as like leverage, like if there were two people in the situation, or if there's a woman, he usually sexually mm-hmm. assaulted the women, and if the plates fell, he would threaten that he would kill like the woman or the other person in the situation. So it definitely makes sense. So maybe there was one robber and they were with Brittany, and they told Jaina, you know, if I hear the tools move, like I'm gonna kill Brittany, or you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's one theory. Another one I was able to find was it could have been applied, which, first of all, I don't think this theory is very likely, but some believe that the toolbox could have been applied as weight to quicken her blood loss.
I mean, we'll get into her injuries, but they seem pretty extensive. I don't feel like that is like necessarily needed in this situation.
A good argument. Exactly. If anything, it seems more of like a petty thing, like kind of like a disrespect. Yeah. Because you're, like, throwing a toolbox on her, like, on her body. Like, okay, I'm done with you.
I mean, if it was after she was dead, it's even more. Like, you're, like, using her, like, a table, like, resting place for the toolbox. Like, that makes way more sense to show, like, disrespect towards Jaina. And, like, that you have no remorse for what they did.
Yeah, like, her body is completely void of any meaning to them. It's horrible. So, let's talk a little bit more about Jaina's injuries. So, they take Jaina's body to be examined, you know, like, with an autopsy. So, what you're about to hear is horrific, to say the least. Jaina was found to have suffered with exactly 331 individual injuries, including 105 defensive wounds. She had injuries to her head, face, neck, back, and extremities. And according to the medical examiner, Dr. Mary Ripple, Jaina was alive throughout nearly all of these injuries until one stab in the back of her head severed her spinal cord and took her life, which absolutely insane. Like the amount of pain she had to suffer going, like experiencing over 300 injuries. And the amount of time
it probably took to inflict those injuries upon her. Like, I know we've talked about this before, but the time that it takes to like inflict that many injuries is crazy. It's insane. And it's just so horrific that she was suffering through like hundreds of wounds before like they actually killed her.
Yeah. And Dr. Mary Ripple actually testified in court later on and stated that this would have taken well over 15 minutes to kill Jaina. So she had to suffer 15 minutes may sound like a short time, like from an outside perspective, but if you're putting yourself in Jaina's shoes, you are being hurt and, you know, like stabbed and hit over 300 times. 15 minutes is a long time.
That also takes a lot of strength on the part of whoever this attacker is. So, I mean, that's also very telling about for the future investigation. Whoever did this had to have either, you know, the rage or the strength or both to, you know, endure 15 minutes of full physical exertion attacking Jaina.
That's true. That's totally true. And so something else that Dr. Ripple discovered was that five different wound patterns were inflicted on her body, meaning that five different weapons were used. And this included a wrench, a merchandising peg, a hammer, a box cutter, and an X-Acto knife. And these were the tools that were found scattered around her body, which we were talking about previously. Another thing about these tools is that they weren't, like, from anywhere. They were from that Lululemon store.
So as of right now, there are no, like, weapons that anyone brought from outside. And if they did, they took them with them.
No, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but all of these were traced from the store. Let's talk a little bit about Jaina herself. Jaina Murray was born on November 22nd, 1980 in Kansas. At a young age, she moved to Texas and grew up there with her family. She was always adventurous and charming. Basically, everyone that met Jaina loved her. And she was a great student growing up. She pursued two degrees, one in business and one in communications in George Washington University, which I bug Allison a lot about this because
I go to Georgetown University, which is also in D.C., but it's not the same.
Y'all, you cannot tell me George Washington and Georgetown sounds like
everything in DC has the word George in front of it. Our first president or whatever, George Washington. Who cares?
Yeah,
the white man.
The white man.
Colonizer. The white man
with the wooden teeth. The one colonized. Damn, maybe I should change that a little bit. I'm gonna have angry people
are gonna be from George Washington. Are gonna be like, first of all, George Washington is better than Georgetown, and second of all, we're not named after a colonizer. Yeah, you are.
Yeah, you are. Exactly. All right, so Allison is from Georgetown, but Jaina Murray was from George Washington University, just to clear that up. Jaina decided to write her master's thesis on the Lululemon corporate model. To get more of an insider on the inner works of the company, she applied to her local Lululemon store, and Jaina loved working here. Not only was she fascinated by its retail techniques, but she got along really well with her coworkers. Basically, all of them adored Jaina, and they were really close with her. All of them except for one, Brittany Norwood. And now, it wasn't that they didn't get along. It was just that they didn't really have enough time to get close. Brittany had only worked there for 3.5 weeks, so they were really only co-workers to each other, nothing more. And around this time, Jaina was promoted to some sort of management position. I'm not entirely sure what, but she definitely had like some sort of privilege and like bigger responsibilities in the store. So this is the reason why she was scheduled with Brittany to close on that horrid night. Brittany was quickly rushed to the hospital, and thankfully, she had only suffered superficial wounds, which really only required some cleaning up. Investigators decided to question her that same day, since she was able to recover so fast from the incident. She and Jaina had closed the store and left around 9:45 p.m. A few minutes later, Brittany reaches the metro, and she realizes that she left her wallet back at work. So she calls Jaina, who has the keys, and they agree on meeting at the front of the store. So they meet up and they walk inside the store and they start looking for Brittany's wallet. But after searching and searching, nothing comes up. They're about to leave when they realize that they hadn't locked the back door. They're turning around, they're going to the back of the store to lock it, and they see two men waiting for them. One of them grabs Brittany by the hair and threatens to slit her throat if she says another word. According to Brittany, Jaina was dragged to the back of the store, screaming and fighting. Meanwhile, Brittany complied calmly to all of the attackers' commands, showing them where the money was kept and keeping quiet. And once her attacker got the money, he forced her into the employee bathroom and began slashing at her with a knife. He then cut her pants open and sexually assaulted her. At some point during the attack, she blacked out. One thing to note is that she couldn't recall how any of her attackers looked like. She really only noticed that they were two men dressed in black, and one was slightly taller than the other. But other than that, there was like no facial recognition for her. After hearing Brittany's encounter of the incident, investigators analyzed the crime scene to try and piece together who the attackers might be. One particularly interesting thing they noticed were the bloody footprints found throughout the store. There was a pair of size 6 women's shoes, which were probably Brittany's, covered by a size 14 men's Reebok tennis shoes. And this really only accounted for half of Brittany's story, since there was no trace of a second man's footprints. Strangely, the footprints didn't appear to leave the store either. So they thought, well, maybe he took off his shoes and walked out.
Okay, that makes absolutely zero sense.
But
like, could you imagine if you like ran into someone and they were like, they like left? I don't even know how this would happen, but like, what goes through your brain that you walk to the exit after like murdering someone and you're like, you know what I should do? I should take off my shoes. I don't want to get blood in my car. It's probably covered in blood all over my Nissan. Like, how would taking off the shoes change anything? There's no logic there. Like,
yeah. And the socks are probably bloody too.
Oh my God, absolutely. Whoever committed this crime, there is no way they did not leave the scene of the crime covered in both Brittany and Jaina's blood.
Yeah, from like the amount of blood that they found in that store, like it'd be a miracle. I think it would be a miracle to step out of the store without at least a drop of blood
on you.
Also,
this is a shopping center. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but I guess it was like 11 p.m. around. But that's weirder. Like, It, yeah. This is such a big shopping center. Like, I've been there. There's movie theaters. There's restaurants. Like, how did no one know this was going on at the time? That's crazy to me.
That's absolutely insane. We're going to get more into that, too, later on, because there's so many more details to the story that's just bonkers. And this one particularly, like, it just makes you question. And I can't even imagine what the investigators were thinking. Like, either this man could levitate and he flew out of the store, but, like, the footprints literally stopped. Okay, they were, like, all over the store, and out of nowhere, they stopped, like, by the back room. But there was no indication that he had left with shoes
on. I don't even know,
on.
Like, if I was the investigator in this situation, I don't even know what theory I could come up with after that. I would be so stumped. Yeah. I wouldn't know where to go with that information. Yeah.
Even more puzzling when investigators spoke with Rachel, the store manager who had found the bodies that morning. She told them that she had received a concerning phone call from Jaina the night before. One of Lululemon's employee policies is to have another employee check your bags before leaving your shift, which basically ensures that none of the store merchandise is being stolen. So that, like, makes complete sense. Jaina had called Rachel the night of the murder, saying how she found some unpaid items in Brittany's purse. And is, like we mentioned, not the first time she's
done
that before.
Wait, so store policy is they check your bags before you leave.
Yeah.
She checked, Jaina checked, and Brittany had stolen something again.
She stole, like,
so
a few items.
So we've confirmed Brittany is a kleptomaniac. This is full confirmation of that.
Yeah, that's established. 100%. This is literally the third reported instance of her stealing
something.
So Jaina,
she calls her superior. She's like, Brittany stole something again.
Eye roll.
Classic Brittany.
Eye roll. She stole something again. Yeah, classic. So obviously, like, this is a huge problem on that night. And the timing of all of this is certainly suspicious, but, you know, that doesn't make Brittany a suspect exactly, you know? Like, you'd think, okay, well, this is weird because, Jaina called her superior, Rachel, and they had this huge discussion over Brittany's kleptomania. And that probably, like, made Brittany really upset. But, you know, that would make you think, okay, well, maybe Brittany had something to do with this.
She had
but
injuries.
Mind you, she was still found. Exactly. She was still found tied up on the floor. She was covered in blood. She had several injuries. So, like, you can't just automatically make her a prime
suspect. She has, like, no history of any violent behavior at all. She steals things, but she has no, like,
exactly.
There's no indicators that Brittany would be involved in this type of, like, organized crime in any way. She had a perfectly fine childhood, like we talked about, like, brought up fine. No instances of her ever having, like, disciplinary issues. She went to a really good school on a soccer scholarship. Like, it doesn't make it, there's no reason to suspect her.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of arrows pointing at her, but there's also a lot of arrows not. So the police kind of just gather this information and move on. That Saturday afternoon, police pulled up some footage from neighboring stores, specifically the Apple store, which pretty much backed up Brittany's story. In this footage, you can see two men wearing black walking through the alley behind Lululemon at around 11 p.m. that night. Police immediately began looking for these two men, questioning every employee in the Apple store next door to Lululemon. None of the employees recall having seen any of these two men found in the footage, but one of them remembers having heard something odd at around 10 p.m. Apple employee heard a heaving sound, almost like if someone were pushing furniture around in the Lululemon store. Then she started to hear screaming. After bringing it up to her coworkers, she goes up to her coworkers and she's like, guys, like, I hear, like, blood-curdling screaming next door, like, come and check this out. They kind of, like, bring their ears closer to the wall and they're finally able to make out some dialogue. They reported having heard a voice saying, oh God, please help me, please help me. And another voice saying,
wait, and they
just
didn't call the cops at that point? That is crazy. No, that is crazy because I live in a city, and if
isn't
I hear anyone outside say anything, I'm, like, up at that window ready to call 911. Like, ready. Did these workers, like, not hear something late at night and get immediately terrified that something bad was going on?
Exactly. And it's not just one employee. It's several employees hearing this, and not one of them decided, hey, someone's clearly in danger. Let me call the police.
Wait, I have a question.
Something, I think we've talked about this before, but it called the bystander effect. One, like, a group of people will be witnessing a crime and none of them calls it, like, 911 because they expect someone else to be doing it.
There's, like, a bunch of famous cases. Like, I know there's this one in New York City from a really, really long time ago, and, like, everyone has heard of it. It's this woman got, like, murdered in New York City, and no one did anything about it because they assumed someone else would call the cops. So I'm sure that was part of it. They thought, like, another store would have heard it and call the cops about it.
It's insane. And that most likely happened in this case, and it's really unfortunate that it did, because who knows if the cops were called from this, you know, from this point, maybe Jaina would have survived.
15 minutes Brittany plus wouldn't we have talked about this been a victim. More than 15 minutes that she was being attacked, like, that there's no way that you could hear that for 15 minutes and not, like, call the cops. I mean, I'm not putting any blame on those people, but it's terrifying that, like, that could happen right next door to you. You have no idea.
But hopefully, like, these instances are kind of like examples for people, like, what not to do when you're witnessing a crime
next door.
Even if you think it's like someone's just, like, practicing their lines for, like, a theater audition, just call 911. Just do it just in case you don't know. And if anything, you're wrong and everything's fine. But, like, at least do it just in case, you know? Yeah. You know, like, this entire situation really sucks, but one of the employees actually gave a vital piece of information that helped turn the investigation on its wheels. They reported hearing two female voices, meaning that there were no male voices at all. So this is when the investigators began putting the pieces together. There was a shoplifting allegation against Brittany, witnesses only hearing two female voices arguing, and the bloody footprints. All of this suggested that Brittany wasn't telling the truth. And unfortunately for Brittany, investigators made one huge discovery that only discredited her story even more. Process the crime scene. They decided to take a closer look at the footprints. Now, if you remember, earlier I mentioned how they were able to connect the size 14 shoe prints to a men's Reebok tennis shoe. And while processing the crime scene, authorities found a pair of the exact same shoes in the Lululemon store next to, like, a store rack. So now they're thinking, what? Did the killer leave his shoes behind?
They actually, like, showed up to the crime scene barefoot. Put the shoes on to commit the crime and then took them off before they left to be respectful. You know how you, like, enter someone's house and you take your shoes off? They did the reverse. To be disrespectful, they put shoes on once they got there.
they saw the shoes, like, and they were like, oh, thank barefoot, God, I didn't bring any shoes, so let me just wear these.
I actually raised tennis nice shoes. Let me put them on to kill this woman.
Surprisingly, he didn't steal them, you know? Like, they're really nice. I would
take them Brittany.
Brittany, okay. Kleptomaniac. Okay, that was good. So the police contact the store manager, Rachel, and she says something really interesting. She tells the investigators that those shoes were always there. So the store always kept a pair of shoes by the fitting room so that people could try on leggings and, like, merchandise and wear the shoes to get a full feel of the outfit. So, like, those shoes belong to the store. And the bloody footprints were clearly staged. They believed it was all done by
Brittany.
Brittany. Think that the footprints were the only things faked. Investigators began to cast doubt on Brittany's injuries. She basically suffered very superficial cuts and bruises that anyone can inflict on themselves. And there was no evidence that the sexual assault that Brittany had reported had actually happened.
Kind of weird that, like, the hospital didn't verify, like, any of her, like, or the sexual assault, like, claim.
Of her injuries. Yeah. I think, yeah, I don't really know how long it does take to do, like, a rape kit on someone. Or, like, how long it takes for the results to come back. But I think all of this information, like, these all little the clues started piecing together, like, little by little. And then that's when they were able, exactly. Right. So, like, they were able to put everything together all at the same point. So, yeah, comparing Brittany's injuries to Jaina's it's so different because Jaina's injuries were completely brutal. There was absolutely no faking the hundreds of injuries that were reported on her body. And another interesting detail that basically points all arrows at Brittany is that all the wounds were traced back to weapons coming from within the store. Now, if we're following Brittany's story, according to her, two men walked in a Lululemon store planning to rob the place with no weapons, which doesn't make sense at
no,
all.
No, like, if they were... Like,
can you imagine that happening?
I don't know. I don't think many robberies are, like, the spur of the moment. So they would have planned, you know, let's hit that Lululemon at this time. And if they were planning it, why didn't they bring weapons with them? Why are there no footprints from more than one person? Why are the shoes from inside the store? Like, if it was planned ahead of time by men that Brittany claims did it, why is there no evidence that is similar to a normal robbery? Like, it makes no sense. The only thing that fits is there's no cash in the cash register, but that's right. That's not a tell that someone, two men robbed the store.
That's not enough.
Someone took cash out of the cash register.
Exactly. And what's funny is that, like, typically with robberies, thieves will kind of, like, scope out the place a few days before or the day before they actually commit the crime, just to, like, know where all the security cameras are, where they keep the cash registers, because they want to get to know, like, a feel of the place before robbing it. And in this case, it seems like these are the most forgetful thieves of all time. They're like, hey, you don't have balls.
You
have
no balls if you go rob that store right now. And they're like, no way, let's do it. No, you won't. Dude, I dare you to.
Dude, I triple dog dare you. Do it without shoes.
Change your shoes once you get inside. Like, levitate, and then they open the door and he dove out of it so his footprints wouldn't go to the edge of the door.
Exactly. So, by now, the only thing making Brittany's story somewhat concrete is the footage of the men in black by the alleyway. But by Tuesday, investigators were finally able to track those two men down. Turns out they were two employees of, like, a local restaurant. They, like, washed the dishes. And they had nothing to do with the incident. They were they happened to walk by at 11 p.m. at the exact same time as the crime. And they were wearing the same description that Brittany had mentioned in her story.
That two men were there at the time that she said the crime happened.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's pure dumb luck. And you could literally think, like, if she would have fabricated a better story, she would have totally gotten away with this. Because, you know, the miracle that it takes for two men in black to pass by the store at the exact same time as the killings were happening.
I'm so blown away still by that fact. Like, I knew that, and every time I hear that blows my mind. Like, it's lucky for us that we eventually figured out that it was just two random dudes, but, like, lucky for her at first that, and unlucky for us, well, not us, but the investigators, that these two dudes happened to be walking by at the exact moment. It made her seem so credible, you know, and tied into the fact that she, like, inflicted wounds on herself.
Exactly.
It all looks so realistic. You're like, believable. Of course her story's true.
Yeah, because, like, obviously these investigators walked in the crime scene. They weren't like, oh, obviously Brittany is the one who did all of this. No, they saw two injured women, a bunch of empty cash registers, and this on top of that, like, the security footage, like, it's obviously you're gonna want to believe Brittany. But thank God these people at least know how to do their jobs to a certain degree, because they were able to figure out that a lot of it doesn't make sense. So ruling the men out, the police had no choice but to turn to their only suspect, Brittany Norwood. However, they needed one more piece of information that would make all of their evidence against her more than circumstantial. So right now, they have a bunch of evidence against her that they could use in court. But this is all circumstantial.
There's no DNA. There's no fingerprints. There's nothing. We can't prove that she had even touched any of those tools.
Nothing. Thank God they hadn't, like, arrested her at that certain point, because another interesting detail surfaces that makes their case more credible. And that thread was found in the shopping center parking lot. The police found Jaina's car parked only a few blocks from the Lululemon store. Some traces of blood were found in the car, indicating that it was driven after the murder. But why? Well, if we look back at Brittany's story, it seems like there was some truth in it. Remember, she claims that she had left her wallet in the store, which meant that Jaina had to drive to the front of the store to meet with her. This left Brittany in a dilemma, specifically because Jaina parked in a prohibited area. And if the car stayed there, people would get suspicious and possibly interrupt her murderous scheme. So she quickly jumped in the car and parked the car in the parking lot after killing Jaina.
If we're taking the angle that, like, Brittany had planned this in any capacity, she knew that she would need to move the car after she committed this murder because it would look suspicious. Or, you know, it's a crowded shopping center and you're not allowed to leave your car there. I'm sure some security guard would have come by and been like, whose car is this? Or, you know, walked up to the first store that it was in front of. And if the car was in front of the Lululemon and he, like, walked up to the store, like, if this really was, you know, Brittany planning this whole thing out, then she definitely could not have left the car there. Otherwise, someone would have gotten suspicious.
Yeah, that's true. And, like, another point is that, like, if you think about it, from the real perspective of it, like, if you're looking at, like, what actually happened, Brittany moved the car all the way to the parking lot, which was blocks away, and came back, and she was dripping in blood. She was literally in public, she had dripping in blood. Yeah.
Exactly. Also, I don't know how this shopping mall looked 10 years ago, but I went there last year. There's a parking garage, like, very far away from everything. So if we're picturing this happening, Brittany was walking from the parking lot to the store covered in blood and no one saw her. She got so lucky.
That's insane. She got so lucky. The fact that nobody saw her. Like, if I were in public and I saw a lady full of blood, like, just casually walking to the Lululemon store, moving. Like, that is suspicious. That was, that's crazy.
No, and also, like, I've been in parking lots before of, like, closed down strip malls, and there's still occasionally a person or there's, like, street lights. The fact that she was not caught on a single security camera, that's
crazy. Yeah, because this was at, like, this had to be, like, around 11 p.m., 12 a.m. Another thing is that we don't really know, like, the timing of this whole thing. Like, she doesn't really, or at least it's not reported, at what time she left the Lululemon store to, like, park the car. But it could have easily been, like, at 3 a.m. when she was, like, done cleaning up everything.
That's true.
If you look back at the security footage of the two men walking, which you can easily find on YouTube, by the way, you're going to see that there is some light. You can at least tell that there's a person walking.
You can see their the back of them pretty clearly. So if she had even walked by the same security camera by accident, like, they would have caught her.
Yeah. So that's another lucky strike for Brittany. Like, she got, it's just dumb luck at this point.
Yeah, one after another lucky moments for her.
Yeah. And so now the only thing that investigators had to do was test their theory. They took Brittany's fingerprints and DNA sample during her questioning or her interrogation on Wednesday, March 16th. And during that interrogation, investigators casually brought up Jaina's car. So they were like, oh, yada, yada, yada. By the way, do you know what car model Jaina had? And she was basically like, no, actually, I've only seen it once, but I've never, like, been inside of it, so I wouldn't know. However, science says otherwise, because as the results came in, turns out it was Brittany's blood in Jaina's car. So they caught her in a lie.
That is good interrogation skills. That is really smart.
Isn't that insane?
Because, you know, she says, yeah, because if she says, I've never been in the car, and they're like, then why is your blood in the car? And it's like, why did you lie? Have you ever been in Jaina's car? And you know they would behind the, like, two-way mirror or whatever. They'd be like, okay, I have a plan on how to break her.
Yeah,
and
the
then
mirror.
They'd, like, go in. And then they'd, like, be like, so, Brittany, you ever, like, been in her car? This. And she'd be like, no. Yeah. And they'd be like, so why is your blood in her, you know?
Why did we find your DNA in the car?
They're, like, yelling at her.
At the same
Meanwhile,
time.
It was definitely, like, a totally normal conversation and, like, nothing like a movie. And we're just like, yeah, I know exactly how it went down.
Yeah. So they find her blood in the car. And when these results come in, the police decide to reveal the newfound evidence to Brittany during her questioning. And let me tell you, this girl is quick. She explains how her attackers forced her to go inside the car and drive it back to the parking lot. But listen up, because this only gets more interesting. You'd think, well, at least one of the attackers must have joined her in the car, right? Like, you know, she at least like to threaten her or something, right? Be like, hey, like, don't try anything because I'm here with a gun or something. No, she drove the car by herself and parked it and then came back, which makes no sense, because why would you go back to the store?
So her story is the attackers told her to move the car. She gets in the car and decides, I'm going to turn around and go back.
I mean, she did explain, like, to the investigators, oh, well, they said that they knew where I lived, and if I weren't to go back, they would go to my house and kill me.
Drive it.
But in that immediately instance, you away drive from to the there, police
go
department.
To the police station and tell them there. Someone at the Lululemon just attacked me and my coworker. And even if, you know, Jaina is in danger,
yeah,
which according to her story, she wasn't. She was dead and she was moving the car because the attackers wanted her to move it. It doesn't make any sense. Like, that's quick thinking, you know, like, yeah. She was quick on her feet to like come up with that. But I mean, from the beginning, we've seen that she has not organized this well enough to cover up her crime.
So that night of the interrogation, Brittany would not be returning home. The police got an arrest warrant and arrested Brittany that very night. And so during trial, all of the evidence we discussed was set on the table for the jury. It seemed like everything was perfectly aligned, pointing directly at Brittany. So much so that her attorney got up in the middle of court and said, she did it. My client did it.
Even at this point, they're like, there's no reason for a trial. This girl did it. We know she killed that girl.
Yeah. Take her to jail. Yeah, take her to prison. So the defense conceded that although she had done it, it wasn't premeditated. So now it changes from my client didn't do it and she's not culpable of this crime to she did do it, but it wasn't premeditated. So they were aiming for second degree murder instead of first degree murder. And I guess, like, to explain the difference, first, we kind of already did, but like, first degree murder is a premeditated homicide. Second degree murder is a spur of the moment homicide. A second degree murder charge could get her as little as 15 years in prison, compared to life without the possibility of parole if she were convicted on first degree murder. So then jurors found Brittany Norwood guilty for first degree murder. She was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Like, the more I think about it, it fits into that, like, categorization of first degree, because my first instinct was, like, second degree. Like, you know, she caught her stealing and she flipped out. But then I remembered that she called her and said, I left my wallet in the store. So maybe she didn't even leave her wallet in the store. Maybe she was just coming up with a reason for Jaina to come back for her to exact her revenge or take out her anger.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, like, few minutes where she was leaving and going to the metro and then decided, like, I'm going to kill Jaina. Or maybe she didn't. Maybe Jaina got there and there was a fight. But it feels way more like first degree when you think about, like, all of the elements and the time between them closing the store and then when the murder occurred.
Exactly. And the thing is that could seem confusing is, like, okay, well, she decided to kill her only, like, a few minutes before she did. But that doesn't mean that that is second degree murder. First degree murder could be considered as little as a few minutes or sometimes even a few seconds before you actually kill the person. So the fact that she kind of, like, went through this in her head only, like, as she was leaving the store, really, like, it really shows that that this was planned. Even if it was a really poor plan, it was still planned. And so she kind of does deserve to be sent to prison for life. And something I'd like to mention too is that she actually tried pleading for parole to the judge. She basically, like, her argument was, well, if you give me the possibility of parole, do it for my family because I want my family to have hope. But the judge wouldn't budge at all. He denied it just because his focus was on the victim, on Jaina. You know, like, she was such a bright and a young person. She was only 30 years old. She had an entire life ahead of her, and her life was taken away just out of anger, just because you got caught for stealing something and you were angry about it and you didn't want to get more in trouble. Like, that's not fair, and you don't deserve. I mean, we could obviously argue, like, you know, Brittany was young too, and like, some prisoners do deserve parole and this and that, but
it's not, you know, it's not easy for us to say whether or not that means, you know, life without parole, yes, parole, whatever. But at the end of the day, she does deserve some form of punishment for what she's done.
Exactly.
The severity of which, that's a whole other argument, but
exactly
for us, for at this point, you know, she's clearly guilty of this crime, clearly overkill to the max, like 300 plus wounds. That's overkill. Not like, oh, yeah, it was a fit. It was a moment and I killed her. And then afterwards I was like, oh my God, what have I done? It was 15 plus minutes of unbridled, unrestrained rage against Jaina.
Which is absolutely insane. That's what kind of like what makes this case so unique is the fact that that it was so
it's so crazy because she just it
was
snapped.
So like there was so much anger and violence.
It's,
in it.
It's that makes it way more terrifying to me.
Yeah, because you don't know, like at least I couldn't find anything that suggested she had anger issues growing up.
It was just one little instance of Jaina getting on her nerves for the last time, and she decided that's it. Like I'm going to kill her, and that is crazy, and that is horrible. It's disgusting. So, you know, she's clearly guilty, and like there has to be some form of punishment for taking someone's life. Like,
absolutely, and I think she's doing that now. She's currently still in prison. Of course, I like we both, Allison and I both send our grievances and our condolences to Jaina's family, because that's obviously such a tough thing to go through. So I guess that does like conclude our episode. Yeah, it was amazing going over this with you, and I hope that I can bring you back soon. Like I have to bring you back at some point. I know that the listeners are gonna be
crazy
over you.
I'm so funny. I'm so smart. I'm so interesting.
So pretty. Yeah. And smart. So yeah, thank you guys for listening. We do post every single Friday, and every other week I do invite a guest over to talk about a true crime case. You can follow us on our Instagram at imurderpodcast. And there you can actually see some pictures and references to this case if you're interested in getting kind of like a visual of that. You can hear this podcast on basically all main platform streaming sites like Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. And as always,
can't be a hottie
if you're a dead body. Always carry pepper spray around. All right, perfect. Thank you. By the way, you can also follow Allison on all of her socials, including TikTok and Instagram. It's at Allison DeRose, and that's going to be included in the description. So go show her some love. This episode was written, produced, edited, and hosted by Jocelyn Martinez. Music by Kaylee Fermin.